Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, who joins us to discuss the implementation of the 2021 infrastructure bill and other top DOT issues. But first, here's this week's headlines. President Joe Biden has made his pick on the next chief ag negotiator at the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. Longtime USDA aide Doug McCaleb has been tapped as the next nominee for the job. McCaleb is currently a senior trade and domestic policy advisor for Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack at the Department of Agriculture. His resume also includes some time at the White House as an ag advisor during the Obama administration. If confirmed, he would be the first official to hold the role during the Biden administration. Also on the trade front, the Biden administration announced a new economic partnership with Latin American and Caribbean trading partners. America's Partnership for Economic Prosperity aims to build up supply chain resiliency, invest in renewable energy, and pursue tax and anti-corruption measures to drive more economic participation. The move follows the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework, which was rolled out in May and includes a dozen Pacific Rim countries. And finally, farmers are as pessimistic about the farm economy as they have been at any point since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. The latest Ag Economy Barometer shows a major dip in farmer opinions of the current and future conditions in rural America. Producers say they're especially concerned by the high input costs that are starting to eat into the high commodity prices at the farm gate. One such input is diesel fuel, which is critical for everything from the equipment in the field to the trucks bringing commodities to market. Average national prices are about $2.50 per gallon higher than the average price a year ago. When we spoke with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, we wanted to focus our conversation on the infrastructure bill and other DOT priorities. But first, we had to ask, what can be done to make the diesel fuel powering the nation's pickups, tractors, and semis a more affordable fuel source?
Well, we're continuing to look at all measures that are available to the administration. Obviously, a lot of this is based on global oil market dynamics, but as you've seen, there's been a coordinated response really across the gas and diesel market, everything from ethanol flexibility to the strategic petroleum reserve. And you're going to continue to see measures as much as possible in order to try to blunt the effect of this really global impact on the diesel and gas market.
Mm-hmm. So I want to pivot to the electric vehicles that so many people talk about. I've heard you say that you think rural America really stands to benefit from that technology. But if we're honest with ourselves, the charging infrastructure is not the same in rural America as it is in urban America. I know there's money in the infrastructure bill to help make that happen. But what do you think folks can expect in terms of a timeline when that charging infrastructure will be there?
Well, that's right. Look, on one hand, rural America has a built-in advantage when it comes to charging infrastructure because rural Americans are more likely to live in single-family homes, which means you have at least basic charging infrastructure in the form of the plug in your wall. At the same time, when you're covering those long distances, or if you don't have your own garage or that kind of access, you're really going to count on the network that we're investing to build right now. We have just put forward, as of today, the requirements for the $5 billion in investments that we're making, working with every state in the country to create that national network. And we expect that work to begin very quickly. The state's plans are due into us by the 1st of August. And from there, I don't think it'll be much longer before you see additional chargers going into the ground, building up those in-between spaces across our highway network where we know we need to create more options so that it's as easy to assume that you're going to find a charge as it is to know there'll be a gas station when you go on a road trip.
We'll be right back to discuss more of the agricultural supply chain with Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg was one of several administration officials who toured rural America to discuss the infrastructure bill earlier this year. When we spoke with him, we asked what he learned about the unique infrastructure needs of rural America during that tour.
You know, I try to spend a lot of time in rural America because these infrastructure needs are unique, and you see how an investment can go a long, long way. Sometimes investments that don't look like as big numbers by the standards of Washington or Congress, but they really add up one community at a time. I'm thinking about $1.5 million that we invested to improve a small port in Tell City, Indiana on the Ohio River. It's going to make a huge difference for their ability to support a foundry that's responsible for about 1,000 jobs. I was just in Eastern Michigan as we were announcing the rail improvements that we're making. And again, the dollar amounts maybe aren't the same that you would expect going into some of the biggest cities. Although when you add it all up, it's a huge proportion of our programs. As a matter of fact, whether you look at our infra grant program, which is focused on freight, or the grants that we're rolling out right now when it comes to rail, you know, we've nearly doubled the congressional requirement for rural investments because so many of the applications, so many of the best ideas, and frankly, so many of the biggest needs are coming from our rural communities. Whether we're talking about bridges that need to be fixed up so you don't have a load limit and have to take a long detour, or whether we're talking about those rail improvements that are going to help ag goods get to where they need to be and can make a big difference for passengers too.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, Mr. Secretary here, I just want to quick pivot to another subject because I know there's been concerns about potential dock worker issues this summer with the expiration of their contract, possible strike there. There's always worries about the health of the nation's rail service given the situations that we've seen, issues that we've seen previously. Farmers and ranchers are going to be harvesting a lot of grain later this fall. Do you think they will have the most reliable supply chain system that they can at that time? Will some of these issues that we're seeing potentially be fixed and be avoidable at that point in time?
So we're always monitoring anything that could impact supply chains, whether we're talking about imports or exports. We've been in touch with the different parties with regard to the West Coast labor negotiations, for example, and so far everything is proceeding smoothly on that front. Also keeping an eye on the rail side where there are labor conversations going on and being ready for just the seasonal pressures that we know are going to come with holiday shopping and a lot of Chinese cities or ports coming back online or coming in and out. You know, the truth is from day to day, week to week, there seems to be always a new factor or surprise that could play a role in our supply chains. It's exactly why we're working both the immediate term and the longer term investments to make sure our supply chains are resilient no matter what the curveball, no matter what the shock. And that's what these big infrastructure investments are about in rural and coastal and urban America alike.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Secretary, thanks for joining us.
Good being with you. Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back to discuss this week's news with our panel. But first, Hannah Pegel takes a look at the state of diesel prices across the country in this week's Map It Out.
If you've driven by a gas station lately, you might notice fuel prices are quite a bit higher than they were a year ago. This week, the U.S. Energy Information Administration reported the national diesel average was $5.70. That's over $2.40 higher than a year ago. This map shows the average diesel price as of June 8th, according to AAA estimates. Some of the highest diesel costs are in California, where the average per gallon diesel price hit $6.94. Although prices aren't quite that high across the country, diesel prices have topped $5 in many regions. In the Midwest, states like Iowa are seeing an average price of $5.29, and on the East Coast, North Carolina's prices have averaged $5.75. For farmers, rising diesel prices are just one item on a long list of rising input costs that are going to impact their bottom lines. Haley Bicklehop takes a deeper look at diesel prices and their impact on farmers in her story on AgriPulse.com. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Happy to be joined by a group of folks that can handle a lot of transportation-related issues, given the theme of this week's show, and excited to be joined by an expert panel guest slate here. Joined now by Mike Steenhook with the Soy Transportation Coalition Ann Steckel with the National Farmers Union, and Peter Friedman with the Agriculture Transportation Coalition. And Peter, I'd like to go to you first here, because one of the things whenever folks talk agriculture, talk transportation, talk supply chain, folks are wanting to talk about that piece of legislation, the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, that includes so many reforms that to the way that cargo is handled, not just agricultural cargo, but cargo in general. But wondering, what is the state of that legislation on Capitol Hill? We've seen House and Senate passage, but what is the state and the status of that bill?
Your timing is excellent for asking that question, for conducting this discussion, because next week, the culmination of 3 years of effort, the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, now of 2022, will be passed by the House. That's final passage. It's already passed the Senate. It'll go to the president. The president has already said he will sign it. And that legislation will provide the Federal Maritime Commission with the authority to continue what it's doing and ramp up the efforts to create a transportation system for containerized agriculture export that will address some of the calamities that have befallen agriculture exports over the last 2 years with the supply chain. It'll force the ocean carriers to actually carry our export cargo rather than simply bring the imported consumer goods from Chinese factories and then return back fast with empty containers to go back and pick up more goods, leaving our agriculture goods stranded at the docks.
Well, and Mike, we've heard so much about some of the issues that have been facing agriculture's transportation system from a wide variety of areas. You've got the trucking, the rail, the ports. There's been a whole host of issues for a while here. But I'm wondering, as you look holistically at the agricultural supply chain, the agricultural shipping system, what do you assess as sort of the weakest point in the area really most in need of investment?
Yeah, it really is kind of all of the above, but one thing that really permeates across all of them is a scarcity of labor. And when you talk to the rail industry, when you talk to trucking companies, of course, truck driver shortages, that's a tale as old as time, but it's become more exasperated over the last couple of years. Barge industry, really all of the links in the supply chain, they're all singing off that song sheet, and that is having adequate labor. It's one thing to have a truck, you have to have a truck driver as well. But you are, in terms of targeted areas of investment, clearly we've got needs on the inland waterway system. We're happy to see additional funding being provided via the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, funding being deployed to rural roads and bridges. And that's one of the soft spots. We always want to be attentive to that initial link in our supply chain, and that's our rural roads and bridges. So that's something that we're really encouraged by, but you know, one of the things that does concern us is what we're seeing in terms of infrastructure inflation and the fact that the taxpayer dollar is not going to be extending as far as what we would normally expect due to the components of building and maintaining infrastructure. It's all going up pretty profoundly, particularly over the last year.
Mm-hmm. I want to circle back to some of the things that you mentioned later in our conversation, but I want to go to Ann first to bring you into the fold here, because a lot of times when folks are talking about transportation, they're talking about moving goods and services and people for the most part. They're also talking about the proliferation of electric vehicles into the supply chain to make that happen. Now, agriculture produces the feedstock used in many biofuels that are fueling those internal combustion engines, of which EVs are not. So, Ann, from the chair that you're sitting in, should the agriculture industry be excited or concerned about that proliferation of electric vehicles?
Well, the National Farmers Union thinks that electric vehicles and the introduction of electric vehicles really just mean more options for consumers. Something that we've been talking about for a long time is how it's very important for consumers to have choice out of just regular petroleum-based fuel, which is why we've always been big supporters of ethanol, biodiesel, renewable diesel. And so, you know, we certainly think that the role of the internal combustion engine is going to be around for a long time. And if the goal of this country is to reduce carbon emissions, the fastest, easiest way to do that is through increased usages of biofuels like ethanol and biodiesel. And so to use those in our cars that we have now and not buying new cars or having other infrastructure upgrade issues is really the fastest way to reduce carbon. So we've been working really hard on that and focusing on that.
We'll be right back to discuss the agricultural workforce, the infrastructure bill, and more with our panel right after this.
Looking closer.
seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. The infrastructure bill represented a massive investment in the nation's roads, bridges, and other forms of transportation. But since then, costs have gone up. We asked Mike if the infrastructure bill contained a sufficient amount of investment given those increased costs.
Well, the good news is that we have that additional level of funding, and that's something that we and many others really advocated for. So that's the good news. But you know, the bad news is, again, is when you have 21% infrastructure inflation, according to the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, you know, that means that's going to significantly erode the purchasing power of that additional funding. I was corresponding with a county engineer in a rural county the other day, and his expected additional funding that he's going to be receiving via the federal government, but also state and local funding, is going to be about 18%. Well, when you have infrastructure inflation being 21%, well, that tells you that you're not going to be able to achieve as much as you originally had anticipated. So I expect in the future, hearing a lot of announcements, whether it's from federal agencies or state or local agencies, along the lines of, we were originally planning to execute this project now, but we will now have to do it later. Or the original price tag was this, but it's going to have to be enhanced to this, all due to this increasing cost of building in and constructing our infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. Peter, one of the things that Mike also mentioned earlier was this issue of the workforce and getting an adequate amount of people to do the work to make this infrastructure really click the way that it best can. Wondering from your standpoint, what is the current workforce situation and what can be done to improve it?
For international transportation, for our agriculture exports, the challenge is that all ocean transportation is a two-way trade. You know, imports come in, exports go out. But you've got to have people to process and handle all of that. So agriculture starts not right at the ports. The stockyards are no longer in downtown Chicago, where the population is and where the train loads of import cargo come. The transportation modes have to move to the places where agriculture is sourced, in Minnesota and North Dakota and South Dakota, all over the Nebraska, Kansas, and so forth, in rural areas. And to get the rail cars there, to get the containers there, to get the containers cleaned there, to get them loaded there. If there's shortages of labor, which there are in rural America, then you can't load the cargo. You can't even get the containers to the places they need to be loaded with our soybeans or cotton or rice and so forth. So that has been the real challenge. There is enough labor at the port authorities, at the marine terminals, on the coasts, but you got to get our agriculture goods to the coasts, to those gateways. That's the challenge.
Mm-hmm. And I want to wrap things up with you here, because over the last week, we've seen the Environmental Protection Agency come out with renewable volume obligations for the nation's renewable fuel standard. We've seen some consent decree discussions between EPA and Growth Energy seeking to set a future rollout schedule for RVOs. Wondering, just from, you know, as you assess biofuels policy generally in sort of this post-congressional mandate world of the RFS, is biofuels policy on solid or shaky ground, do you think?
I think biofuels policy is potentially on very solid ground. What is very important to the future of biofuels is solid policy. And so it's incredibly important that we work with the EPA to ensure timely announcements of continued growth in our biofuel sector, like ethanol and biodiesel. And so we need to continue to grow those volumes. And it's really important, as we're looking towards the future, to be thinking big about what are our big picture policy items we want. If we're looking at the ethanol space, we look at blends like E30, these higher level blends that really provide the high octane, low carbon that everyone is wanting in a low carbon future. And so we're feeling very confident that biofuels has a very solid place in that from both the ethanol, the biodiesel and the renewable diesel perspective. And we'll continue to diversify our fuel system.
So many things go into the nation's transportation system, so many different facets, so many different figures, and so many different people with a role to play in it. And Mike, Peter, and Ann, we appreciate all of you stopping by to discuss that. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Hannah Pagel takes a look at a critical spending priority for many in farm policy in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The United States is a global leader in agriculture production. However, when it comes to investments in agriculture research and development, the U.S. is behind many of its foreign competitors. Investments in agriculture research not only help increase farm productivity, they also help support improvements in natural resources and forestry management, rural development, and enhance food safety and quality. Public agricultural R&D spending in the United States totaled just over $5 billion in 2019, which is the last year complete figures were available. That's a 30% drop from 2002, when spending was just under $8 billion in 2019 inflation-adjusted dollars. USDA's Economic Research Service has found R&D outlays are now only slightly above 1970s spending levels. While American public funding has relatively flatlined, other countries have increased R&D spending. China has become the largest funder of agricultural research in the world, surpassing the United States and the European Union. Brazil and India are close behind in their investments too. If present trends persist, experts say it may affect the United States' role as a global agriculture leader. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. There's a pair of House Ag Committee hearings on the agenda. On Tuesday, the committee will take a look at nutrition programs other than the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Then on Wednesday, the panel will study the role of climate research in supporting agricultural resiliency. And on Friday, the Senate Ag Committee heads to Arkansas for a field hearing on the next farm bill. Stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for the latest on these hearings and more that is expected to unfold throughout the next week. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.